Republicans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thank you for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. We've got a great one on the way for you today in just a minute. Ray McGovern will join us, fresh back from Moscow, where he and other activists met with NSA leaker Ed Snowden. And they presented him with the Sam Adams Award. I'm very proud of what Ed Snowden has done, and Ray McGovern certainly shares that sentiment. You'll hear all about it coming up straight ahead. I'm grateful to the people who support this program by subscribing, including Joe Carson, a whistleblower himself, Diane Morris, Jeanette Iannucci, Linda Gray, and a new subscriber, Jeffrey Gill. Thank you, one and all. If you're inclined to subscribe, why don't you go right ahead and click that mouse? Go on over to peterbcollins.com, and under my picture on the upper left-hand corner of the homepage are the links you can follow to set up your own subscription. $5 a month, cancel anytime. Or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. And that, of course, earns you a bag of Kona coffee, the kick-ass variety, supplied courtesy of Russ Archibald and friends on the Big Island of Hawaii. And we've got the bonus book, Spying on Democracy, by Heidi Boghossian, While They Last. So get on board. The other way you can support the Peter B. Collins Show is by steering your web business to GoDaddy.com. They've got a special deal right now, web hosting with unlimited storage and bandwidth starting at just $1.99 a month, and they'll give you your domain name free for a screaming deal from PeterBCollins.com that helps us too. Follow the GoDaddy link in the show file for this podcast at PeterBCollins.com. And now, exclusive to the Peter B. Collins Show, Ray McGovern reports on his visit to Moscow.
From Russia, with love, I fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you.
Former CIA analyst and a longtime guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show, Ray McGovern, traveled to Moscow last week with a delegation that includes many people you've heard on this program. Former FBI agent Colleen Rowley, former NSA official Tom Drake, Jesselyn Radak, who was a whistleblower at the Justice Department related to the John Walker Lind case. And it was quite a moment where they presented the Sam Adams Award to Edward Snowden, the celebrated, at least in these parts, NSA whistleblower. Ray, welcome back from Russia.
Thank you, Peter B.
So I want to hear all about this, but tell me first and foremost, it appears you returned unscathed and without the special new Miranda treatment, as in David Miranda, the nine-hour delay for a lot of questions at Heathrow Airport.
Well, so far so good, Peter B. As I was mentioning to another friend, polonium takes a little while to settle in, so check with me next week, okay?
Okay. Well, you could go down to Radio Shack and get a little Geiger counter and see if your radioactivity is elevated.
I'd rather be surprised.
Yeah. Well, let's get right to it. What is Ed Snowden like, and what was it like for you to meet with him?
Well, it was extremely encouraging. He was a fellow who risked all, right? Literally all, his whole future life, because he had taken this solemn oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. He took that seriously. And as he explained in his own words when he got to Hong Kong, what he witnessed being done in terms of trashing our Fourth Amendment rights, he couldn't get anybody to sort of take it seriously. And he decided, well, you know, I could sit back, keep my $100,000 salary and stay in Honolulu and relax and laugh at all this stuff, or I can observe and honor the solemn oath they took to the Constitution of the United States. And, you know, it shouldn't be such a wonder, but it isn't, in a sense, that a young man of 29 years old would have the courage and the faith in our Constitution to go ahead and figure it out, you know. What he did was he saw all these abuses. He knew from Dan Ellsberg's experience and his advice that when you do this kind of thing, you don't just go out and tell somebody. You bring the documents, right? You have to have the documents to make anybody believe you're authentic, especially given these incredible things that our government has been doing. And then he learned from people like Thomas Drake, the NSA whistleblower, who went through channels. And after 3 years of trying to get the Inspector General of NSA, the Pentagon, people in Congress to pay heed, they turned around and indicted him on 10 felony counts that would have put him away for 35 years. Long story short, after this four-year persecution, the prosecution never got off the ground because he had a lot of help from people like Jesselyn Radek, mm-hmm. who was also with us, and because he was able to prove that these charges were without foundation. The judge who acquitted Tom Drake of all felony charges upbraided the Justice Department folks, saying you should have never brought this case. This is unconscionable behavior, unprofessional behavior on the part of the Department of Justice. You should be ashamed of yourselves. So these are the kinds of guys that we're dealing with, and what I'm trying to say here is that Edward Snowden watched all this, you know. He watched what happened to Bradley Manning. He watched what happened to Tom Drake. He knows where Julian Assange is all cooped up. And so he said, you know, I'm a pretty clever guy. I can figure this out. And he did figure it out. He figured that if he flew directly from Honolulu to San Diego, he could do that without anybody noticing right away. All he needed was a couple of days. He figured out that if he told Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras how to communicate without NSA getting it right away, that they'd do that. So he met them in Hong Kong, and gave the goods over to them, and ended up with, you know, four empty laptops. What happens then? Well, Glenn and Laura, you know, they're not Salvation Army workers. They're journalists, so they went home. So there's Ed in Hong Kong, not really having thought through much further than Hong Kong, which has reasonably good laws for protecting journalists and people like him.
Well, on that score, Ray, I would offer that Ed Snowden has done us a great service, but he will never go down in history as the greatest fugitive of all time.
Well, you know, that's to his credit, because all he wanted to do was to get out and get the material out. And in his first interviews, he indicated, you know, I know that I made myself very vulnerable, that they're probably going to get me in the end, the most powerful country in the world. So what happens? He gets marooned in Hong Kong, and to the rescue comes WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
Julian Assange and Sarah Harrison decide, well, we'll bail this guy out. Sarah goes to Hong Kong, arranges to get him a ticket through to Havana, through Russia. Now, this is not something that Snowden really intended. He thought he might be able to get to Havana some other way, or, you know, to Latin America, but it was sure a better bet than staying in Hong Kong. So he gets in the air, and he's flying to Moscow, and what happens? The U.S. government, after shaking its finger at Vladimir Putin saying, yes, we know there's no extradition treaty between our two countries, but you must give this man up. Putin doesn't take that kind of treatment. And so he decides that we'll let the fellow land in Moscow. And as you know, he was ticketed to go on to Havana, and mm-hmm. there were a lot of correspondents and journalists who were on that plane and spent an awful lot of money when there was an empty seat. He wasn't there. Why wasn't he there? Well, because it's too dangerous. Look what the Americans did to that plane by the Bolivian chief of state.
Mm-hmm.
They forced it down in Vienna.
Yeah.
So there he is in Moscow for a month at Sheremetyevo Airport, and Sarah Harrison is sticking to his side like glue. Why? Well, to be able to be a witness that the Russians, at least at this point in history, are not applying enhanced interrogation techniques, okay? They're not beating him about the face and mouth to get him to tell still more information. So Sarah is his guarantee, his witness that he's being taken care of. And after a while, he has to apply for asylum because he has no passport. And wonder of wonders, Vladimir Putin says, yeah, okay, as long as you don't release any more material detrimental to our friend. And he said, no problem. I mean, everyone knew he had already shot his wad, so to speak. They knew that Greenwald, Poitras, and everybody else had all the information. He doesn't have any more.
Mm-hmm.
And if something happens to him, then there's automatic little click, I think, that lets it all go out. So anyhow, he gets asylum in Russia. And, you know, the supreme irony here, and I was thinking about this today, you know, history is full of irony. I mean, today's Columbus Day. Now, my favorite little history of the discovery of the New World is Samuel Eliot Morrison's book, and he starts out that chapter this way. America was discovered by someone who was looking for something else, and the next two centuries were spent trying to figure out a way around or through it. It was named after a person who had nothing to do with the discovery of America. And the people there, the inhabitants, they were named after inhabitants of a country on the other side of the world. History is like that. Very chancy, okay? Well, here you have Snowden. He's in Hong Kong. He didn't have any idea he'd end up in Russia, but he does. But the chancy, the irony here, is that he couldn't be right now in a safer place. You have the head of the House Intelligence Committee, Mike Rogers,
mm-hmm.
by the way, he's a failed FBI agent.
That's right.
You ought to look into his background. And you have General Hayden, that famous and ever-present bald figure that appears on CNN and every other news outlet that will let him on.
Hey, easy on bald guys. But in this case, fine, go ahead.
Just try to distinguish him, nothing personal. But, you know, here he is standing up 10 days ago and saying, you know, I think that there's a list that I'd like to put it with Snowden on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows he's referring to the kill list for assassinations, the one that the President of the United States reviews every Tuesday morning to see who lives and who dies. And it includes American citizens because this particular president asserts the right to violate the Fifth Amendment and deprive people of life at his own whim without due process. So, anyhow, Hayden says this, and Mike Rogers, who is at the same meeting, says, yeah, well, I could help you out on that, you know.
What a bunch of yucksters.
In New York, and, yeah, I could help you out on that. So here they are, fooling around, making light, making a joke out of killing Snowden with a drone. Now, what's the bottom line for me? The bottom line for me is that by an accident of history and by some really stupidity on the part of the U.S., Kerry especially, but those who decided to pull his passport, Snowden is free, but not entirely free, of course, but he's safe. And that's the big thing. He's safe for another year, and all that happened pretty much by serendipity, providence, whatever you want to call it. It wasn't really planned, but he's in a safe place, and we're very grateful for that. And we were extremely grateful that with the help of WikiLeaks and with the help of Sarah Harrison, we were able to arrange this wonderful, wonderful ceremony hosted by a lawyer, Kucherina, who heads up a nonprofit there for democracy a nonprofit having to do with civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
He hosted us, and he said he'd only stay about 15 minutes, but he stayed for the whole ceremony, which was an hour and a quarter, the formal ceremony where we gave him the Sam Adams Award. And then he made his excuses, and we hung around, put our feet up on the table, and just had a wonderful time with Edward for the next 5 hours. It was just an incredible evening.
So take a moment here to tell us what he was like and what his attitude is toward the United States and toward those of us who truly respect and appreciate what he's done.
Well, he's a patriot. You know, people are so calling him, well, traitor or hero. Well, he's not a traitor. The ones who are violating our Constitution and the Congress and the executive branch and even in the judiciary, they're the traitors, okay? Snowden is a patriot. That's the word I assigned to him. And he very much misses the United States. He wants to come back when it straightens itself out. But he's incredibly focused. I mean, he's centered, and he keeps up with all this stuff that's going on. His primary concern, you may recall, when he first got out of the U.S., was that he would have sacrificed all this, everything, for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing would happen, okay? Well, we were able to satisfy ourselves that he has enough access to the Internet to know that a lot of stuff has happened, right? And we were there to witness to that and to get his suggestions on what else should happen. As you know, there's a lot of legislation in being now. It's being promoted to curtail these gross violations of the Fourth Amendment. And so he's looking on this very carefully and very assiduously. And, you know, when I asked him, Ed, are you aware of what the previous CIA and NSA director Mike Hayden and Mike Rogers, the head of the House Intelligence, are you aware that they jokingly said that you should be put on the list for the kill list for assassination? He looked at me with a sort of wistful smile and shook his head, and he said, "Yeah, Ray, you know, what has our country become? I know about that. It disquiets me, but I just have to shake my head."
So did he comment at all on the news, and this may actually have overlapped, but on Thursday, the New York Times reported some information they claim that came from his CIA personnel file. And there were some negative comments that were put in there. One of his supervisors in Geneva, Switzerland, said he observed a change in Ed Snowden and that he was accessing files that he didn't have authority for. Then the following day, actually was published on Saturday, the Times walked that back, saying that the CIA denied that it had suspicions about Snowden when he worked for them in Geneva back in 2009. Was he aware of this?
Well, he was not, that I know of. It was the day after we met with him. So
okay.
The way I read that was that the New York Times was fully able to report on our meeting, which, of course, was the first one with Snowden since he took asylum. And we talked to them at some length. But no, they had this thing ready. They were going to run something different, and this would be to blacken him, to say, mm-hmm. this guy, you know, he's trying to access the file. We should have caught him in, and then he wouldn't cause all this trouble now. We wouldn't put all this truth out in there, you know? So that's the way I read that.
The Times didn't treat you the way the Daily News did, which was cartoonish in basically questioning your patriotism for going to share this honor with him.
Yeah, the Daily News and the New York Post, you know, I grew up in New York, so I know what they're like. I haven't been called a rogue recently, but I've been called worse things, Peter B.
You're kind of roguish, I think, in a charming way.
Well, thanks, I suppose. But, you know, the whole business about the press here, witness this. I'm trying to look up this morning what NBC might have said about all this. Well, you know, couldn't find anything except, whoops, there's a little piece about the chief foreign correspondent for NBC is over in Moscow just a couple days before we were interviewing Anna Chapman. Anna Chapman was that fancy redhead spy who was caught 3 years ago here in the U.S. in mm-hmm. exchange for some Russian spy. She's having her new TV show. And so this fellow, the chief foreign correspondent for NBC, was out up there. What were his questions? His questions were, well, what about that Twitter that you sent to Edward Snowden proposing marriage? Did you get a response? Or why did you really seriously consider that? Give me a break, you know. That's all they're interested in.
Yeah.
Anna Chapman, well, yeah, had a fancy cover of Maxim, Russian magazine, and she looked really, really pretty good there. But you know, it was sort of like the quintessential descent of journalism here, where the chief foreign correspondent in NBC was talking to Anna Chapman, and of course could have stayed on just a day or two to talk to us. Yesterday's TV shows, I asked all my friends, Jessalyn, Tom, Colleen, did anyone ask you on any of the Sunday talk shows?
Yep.
Are you kidding? They don't want to talk to us. So it's still a major, major challenge, Peter B., to break into this, and we have to do that.
Because well, and the government shutdown gives them a great excuse to stop talking about these important issues. But I'm pleased that Southern California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff is not sleeping through the government shutdown and has moved forward on his bill to reform the FISA court. Now, I'd like to see the FISA court completely disbanded, and these issues should be run through the general federal courts, in my opinion. We can't have a secret court, even if the secret court has an advocate for our Fourth Amendment rights. I just think it's fundamentally un-American. However, I recognize that given what Feinstein wants, which is just some cosmetic changes and to keep the status quo as much as humanly possible, what Schiff is doing, what Rush Holt is doing, and what Republican Jim Sensenbrenner has done to repeal the Patriot Act. These are important steps, and I'd like to hear what Ed Snowden's punch list is. What does he think we need to do to return to constitutional rule, Ray?
Well, he was eloquent. If you look on what WikiLeaks has released now and what Democracy Now! Played this morning, about 3 minutes' worth of his little speech, he was eloquent on what he wanted. He was not specific on any of these bills. But he clearly wants this thing addressed and is kind of satisfied that because of his initiative, these things are being addressed. Colleen Rowley had a really good conversation with him about these things, and he's just incredibly interested, and all I can say is that in all our banter and all our conversations, we didn't get into which bill would be the best, but the ones you mentioned, Sensenbrenner and Rush Holt and the Schiff, those are all good initiatives and give us all some kind of hope that this thing can be addressed in a smart way and without too much more delay.
Well, and it's interesting. In today's New York Times, Paul Krugman talks about the old Dixiecrat alliance of Republicans and Democrats that did some ugly things, but it kept the government running. And given the implosion of the Tea Party and the current shutdown debt ceiling battle, Krugman is arguing that we may see a return to those kinds of alliances. And I think it's interesting, the Amash Amendment really just overturned partisan apple carts in Washington in ways that I think are extremely refreshing and offer us some hope about realistic reform.
Well, let's hope. What we're doing is everything we can to push these reforms. Colleen was in town, a good week before we went over to Moscow, attending all these hearings. She attended the one where General Alexander was asked about those famous 54 terrorist incidents that he said had been thwarted mm-hmm. by this mass collection. And it turns out when he was really asked about this by the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, it turns out there was only one, and this one had to do with some Somali, I think, sending $8,000 or a couple of thousand dollars to some...
It was four guys in San Diego who did a bake sale, raised $7,500 to send to Al-Shabaab. And despite
That's the best they could come up with.
Despite the Westgate Mall and our failed commando raid in Somalia to get an Al-Shabaab leader, there is zero indication that Al-Shabaab has any actionable plans to hit the United States, either on our soil or our interests around the world. And to elevate Al-Shabaab to the level of a serious terrorist threat to the United States is just ridiculous. And Pat Leahy, in his stammering kind of harumph manner, really stripped Alexander of this claim. He said it's bogus, right? And Alexander basically demurred. He didn't have a comeback. He didn't have a least truthful answer rehearsed from General Clapper's collection of talking points.
Well, Alexander is one of the most powerful people in this country.
On Earth. Come on.
He heads up not only NSA, but the Cyber Command. And, he lied early on. As soon as James Reston published that first article in the New York Times, the one that the Times sat on for a whole year and plus, Rush Holt went out to talk to Alexander. And it was just a week before the article came out, and no one had thought to tell Alexander that the jig was up, that Sulzberger was finally going to defy the White House after 14 months and print the story, okay? So Rush Holt goes out there, and he's the congressperson with the portfolio for NSA, okay? He's on the House Intelligence Committee. And so he says to Rush Holt, he says to Keith Alexander, General, look, there are a lot of rumors going around that you fellas are violating what we've always considered to be the first commandment out there in NSA, thou shalt not eavesdrop on American citizens without a warrant. Are you doing that? Keith Alexander says, oh, no, of course not. We're not doing that at all. Well, a week later, the article appears in the New York Times, and Rush Holt is in high dudgeon. He writes a little thing saying, if I have anything to do with it, this liar, this perjurer, because, I'm his overseer in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
When he lies to me, that's perjury. He'll never get another straw if I have anything to do with it. Well, hang on, folks. 3 years later, he's got his fourth star, and now he's got a new agency that he heads.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else is running this country, and it ain't the Congress.
And Ray, there are a couple of important issues here with Alexander and with Clapper. First of all, they have completely shattered their own credibility, and they should have resigned long ago, and the president is, it's a shame, and his shame, that he has not demanded their resignations. Secondly, they have no credibility because they keep trotting out representations that are almost immediately undermined or completely proven false by the latest revelations from Snowden via Greenwald. And so one of those issues is offensive cyber warfare. Alexander wears two hats, and one of them is running the Pentagon Cyber Command. And the Snowden documents revealed more than 200 offensive cyber attacks in 2011 alone. And this is an issue that I've been railing about for years, that once we learned about the Stuxnet virus that destroyed computer systems in the Iranian nuclear sector, Natanz and other places, I said, look, this is an act of war. This is the same as lobbing a missile, sending a drone, or putting boots on the ground. And to pretend that we can conduct offensive cyber warfare without any action from Congress, without any public debate, is fundamentally un-American. So against that disclosure of 200 offensive attacks in 2011, we have leaks from unnamed American officials, okay, who say that in reality only a handful of those attacks have been carried out. Well, I don't believe that. And I don't believe it, particularly because Alexander isn't even willing to put his own name on that false representation. It comes from an unnamed source.
Yes, Peter B., the system is pretty corrupt. This business of cyber warfare, you know, this is going to come back to haunt us big time. The U.S. has always had an advantage, at least since World War II, because we had aircraft carriers, because we had fancy fighter bombers and all this other stuff. You don't need that anymore, Peter B. All you need is some really highly educated, technical young people, and they can wreak havoc on your systems. And the U.S. doesn't seem to be aware of that. But, you know, there are just as many, there are probably more, really smart Iranians getting out of high school and college in China and elsewhere. And it's going to be a much more level playing field now. And guys like Alexander should be fired, number one, for integrity reasons. But number two, the whole thing doesn't make any sense because we're starting things that we won't be able to turn the faucet off about and will be reduced to having a level playing field where it doesn't much matter if we have 5 battleships or 18 carriers or whatever. Mm-hmm. If we don't have at least as good a cyber defense, and if we don't stop provoking others, like with the Stuxnet, it's going to be a different world for us, no matter how much we spend, no matter how many billions we spend on, quote, defense, end quote. It ain't going to work any better than it is now, for sure.
And, Ray, while you were cavorting in Russia and consorting with the other side, the dangerous leaker, that lefty news organ called the Wall Street Journal, owned by a little guy named Rupert Murdoch, published an interesting story about the new Bluffdale mega data center that the NSA has constructed in Utah. And first of all, they maintain that it's not online yet. But my NSA sources say, oh, yeah, it's at least partially functioning and collecting phone records, phone calls, emails, text messages, whatever we communicate. And the journal reported that over the last year, there have been at least a dozen incidents where essentially surge protectors failed. And this produced fires in electrical vaults. And that is consistent. I want to be clear that I'm completely speculating from this point on, okay? But that report is consistent with some sort of externally introduced cyber weapon. And, of course, we're told, well, it couldn't happen. Bluffdale's completely off the grid. It only has, you know, inbound data coming from the intercepts at AT&T offices and other switches around the country. But we were able to penetrate Natanz, which is similarly off the grid. And so to pretend that we're completely invulnerable is another exercise in American exceptionalism and denial. And I have no proof that the incidents at Bluffdale were caused externally. They could simply be, problems with the construction. But I think we have to at least consider that possibility.
I'm afraid you're right, Peter B. It occurred to me as well. There's an old biblical verse that says, without vision, the people perish. And that's what's lacking here in Washington. There's no vision with respect to how we can make a peaceful world. When, back when I was in the traces here in the CIA, I'll give you one example. We were afraid that there would be an arms race in space, that nuclear weapons would be put up into space. We both, the Soviet Union and we, had the capability of doing that. And we got together and we said, does it really make sense to do that? And we said, no, it doesn't. And so we got together and we worked out a treaty prohibiting it. And it worked. There are no nuclear weapons in space, okay? Now, why don't we do that now with cyber or with drones? There's no vision. There's just this exceptional business where, the U.S. is the sole indispensable country in the world. That's the word that's also used. If antonyms still mean what I learned in school, the antonym for indispensable is dispensable, and that's by ipso facto, mm-hmm, is what all other countries are. They're dispensable, and they know that. The only problem is that they don't need aircraft carriers anymore. They don't need ICBMs. They've got other tools. And if we don't rein in these other tools, if we don't figure out ways to negotiate like we used to, then we're all in for a really bad time for our grandchildren.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Ray, as we wrap up here, how can my listeners do anything to make Ed Snowden's life better? Did he give any indication that there are ways that we could communicate with him, or that there are ways that we could signal to him that we value what he's done, that we're not going to forget him, and that at some point in the future, people like you and I will rally to see that he is forgiven of the legal offenses that have been trumped up so far, and that we welcome him back to a different America that hopefully by then is under constitutional rule?
Well, Peter B., I'm really glad you asked that, because there are some very public-spirited people who are at work on ways to do precisely this. One is the Partnership for Civil Rights Fund. This is a small law firm in Washington that takes very difficult cases where demonstrators are roughed up or discriminated against, but they also have a very public outreach. And if you go to their website, the Partnership for Civil Liberties Fund, you'll find that they've started a support campaign for Edward Snowden, which includes people getting their photos taken with a little sign in support of Edward Snowden. Alice Walker was one of the first people to do that. But also they're wrapping around signs around buses and around metro and metro stations and all. There's a number of things you could do, and that's the best thing. If they could just check in with the Partnership for Civil Liberties Fund, Civil Rights Fund, I guess it is, they're the best. And that campaign is growing nicely.
All right. Well, Ray, thank you for the report. I'm glad you returned safely from Russia, and we'll check back with you in a week or two on that polonium thing, okay?
Thanks very much, Peter B. Take
care. Ray McGovern here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll do whatever you can to send that kind of message to Edward Snowden. He's a hero to me.
Happy trails to you until again, happy trails.